What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and our guest today, you might have heard of him, is Eno Saris. Hey, Eno.
How you doing? You're back in your element, back home.
Let's go, baby. I will be in San Francisco in 3 weeks. I didn't even think about this. I wonder if there's a way for us to do a live version of this. Because right, I'll be in San Francisco in 3 weeks on that Wednesday. So maybe we can do something like that. That might be a fun
event. And we'll have other people.
Yeah,
that are coming.
Maybe we could do something. Literally, this is me coming up with this right now on this podcast.
Could throw questions at us or something.
Oh, that would be so much fun. I'll see if I can find a place to do that.
Or maybe we tell everybody who's coming to the game to have a pitcher.
Yeah.
And they just, it's the two of us, and they come on and they say their pitcher name, and we all three of them talk about the pitcher. Like,
oh, that sounds an interesting pitcher. So much fun.
And all three of us talk about it for 5 minutes, and then the next person comes on.
There
we go.
Because
they're all like sort of fantasy heads, you know?
Yeah, of course. And yeah. I imagine there's got to be like some place that says, yeah, can we just like take the back over here? We don't need like speakers or something like that. We can just be normal.
I got an idea. Yeah.
Oh man, that would be so much fun. So that would be in 3 weeks. That'd be August 28th. We'll figure it out. We'll let you guys know if we're going to move forward with that. Sounds like so much fun. But today we got to talk about pitching. Guess what? Crazy, I know. Before we do, though, I got to get your take, and I'm curious how you feel about it. I don't know. Have you taken a look at Process Plus yet, Eno?
Oh, I've seen a bunch of Kyle tweets about it, yes.
Okay.
And it looks great.
It's a super fun thing. If you're unaware, we have our set PLV, of course, that is very similar to Eno's work with Stuff Plus and Location Plus and, of course, Pitching Plus. And what we've done is we've taken the individual events of every single pitch and then attribute it to the hitter now and saying, great, based on this pitch quality, these are the expectations that we have for choosing to swing inside the zone or out of the zone, for making contact. Should you be making contact if you're swinging at this pitch or not? And then when you do make contact on this pitch, do you get power or not generally? And we treat that as the three steps of a process for a hitter. Are you swinging the right pitches? Are you making contact to the pitches that you should? And then are you hitting the ball hard when you make contact? And Kyle's done an amazing job. It's not just complete like summation of the three. He's actually just elegantly smashed them together to create Process Plus, which to us is really like the skills component of WRC Plus. And so the results that WRC Plus is. And what's so cool is that these charts that he made are showcasing all three elements. So you can actually see where the Process Plus like 120, but it's this much power and this much contact and this much decision. So you actually see what skills they are exhibiting to get that process. And you might be saying, Nick, this is not a pitching thing whatsoever. Well, due to pitching analysis, we're able to then analyze the hitters. They go back and forth. And what's so funny, you know, is I think at some point we can go the other direction. Like you can then say, cool, this is the Process Plus of these guys against these kinds of things to the pitcher, and then say, well, then, I mean, it's kind of what PLV does, but you can really assess like where the guys are and if there was bad luck, good luck, that kind of thing. I love this kind of thing. I want to say it's like Stuff Plus for hitters. Is that crazy?
It's really close. I mean, I think the only difference that I had when I had this idea in my head was that I might drill down even further. Like Stuff Plus might be like bat path and bat speed.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, sure. So, you know, this is almost like an expected WRC Plus kind of idea or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, but it's really close. I mean, given what we have, it is definitely, on the path of what I was talking about. Yeah. With the, you know, the idea of like at some point being able to describe the bat path all the way from the shoulder, you know, from the bat on the shoulder to
right
to pass contact, then we might have, you know, some stuff where we can drill down even further. Because if you think about it, Stuff Plus is like really just the base physical measurements. This is a little bit more using things that have happened on the field. I don't want to say results because it's not results. It is
like in a way of like stats. It is exit velocity is kind of a weird result, right?
Yeah, exit velocity is a result. Yeah.
Right. So it's like the exit velocity, like I think about the timeline of an event, it's like the pitcher throws something, mm-hmm. the batter makes the decision, exit velocity and launch angle happen, then the true result that we see on the, you know, on the page. Right. So like exit velocity is like tangential to it, like you can hit it really hard, but it's a home run or it's an out, right? So it's close, but right, there's really the batter does something, the hitter and the pitcher does something. Those two things are not result based. And then once actual physical contact made or not, that kind of thing is more result based. It's a fun thing. You guys can check it out if you have PL Pro. We have like rolling charts for it. It's amazing.
Wait, it says pitch hitability in the metric descriptions, but I don't see it in the actual table.
It's not in Process Plus. It's a pitch hitability is one of the metrics that you can select inside those rolling charts. So we have a lot of different metrics from pitch hitability, swing aggression, strike zone judgment.
It's in the rolling charts, but it's not in Process Plus.
Process Plus only has decision, contact, and power.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is counterintuitive or not obvious, you know, there was a tweet recently about Aaron Judge saying like, oh, if someone finds me a picture of Aaron Judge hitting a good pitch, like, you know, what? For a homer, like, you know, that'll be the first time. And I mean, he's hit 40 homers. So like, you know, whatever it is. So it's, you know, it's not like they're all bad. But the flip side also is that some part of hitting is just punishing mistakes.
Well, right. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
We have ways of quantifying this too, which is so funny to me. Like we have mistake rate. We know when a pitcher throws a pitch that has double the chance of allowing a hit. And we know that Aaron Judge does get a slightly higher number of them. I mean, is this something you've mentioned before in the past that pitchers generally throw more mistakes, I think, or at least like not like amazing competitive strikes to better hitters. Is that right?
Yeah.
It is something. Right, because they get kind of just overthrown it, and they're not really in their rhythm.
Well, their command goes down. I mean, they go further from the center of the zone. So
right. So there's
Aaron
that.
Aaron Judge's pitch hit ability has been below average and in the 8th percentile for the season.
And that's a huge thing about hitting. Exactly what you're saying is that with this, with Process Plus, we're like, well, decision value. Are you swinging at pitches that you should be swinging at or not? And
yeah,
that
and that goes hand in hand with what pitches are you seeing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's actually why when we were looking at AAA hitters, we have our PLV stuff applied to AAA pitchers. It's great. It helps me like look up, is this guy actually good in AAA or not? Like, oh, does he have a good fastball? It's like most guys do not. But with hitters, we couldn't really apply it the same way because decision value is so weird. There's so many bad pitches. There's so many, you know, to say you have a good decision value in the minors is like, well, yeah, because they're all out of the zone over here. You just see a lower quality of pitching, which throws that kind of out the window a bit.
Yeah, no, it also makes it hard to evaluate, I think, because there will be guys that sit on those pitches in the minor leagues and you're very tempted to say, oh, he has really good swing decisions.
Right.
But exactly. What happens when he's faced with much better pitchers?
Right.
You know, is he too passive? You know, that was one of the things with me is I thought chase rate for hitters was a really great stat. Mm-hmm. But when we looked into the correlations between chase rate and other hitter stats, they weren't that strong.
Right.
Because some guys are too passive. You know, you have your Kevin Biggios of the world where it's, you know, you should actually be more aggressive. When you just do something as simple as take zone swing rate and subtract chase rate from it, it becomes more predictive of power. Because the question is not only do you not swing at balls, it is do you swing at strikes?
Yeah, well, right.
And that's when you start to because that's where it made more sense. There was, you know, there's people who believe in bat path, there's people who believe in barrel rate, whatever. There's everyone sort of has like a stat they kind of believe in most. And chase rate was something I really believed in for a long time, and I couldn't figure out why, if you're not swinging at balls that produce bad exit velocities, does it not correlate better with power if you don't chase?
Yeah.
And of course it's zone swing because you actually have to swing at the pitches that do create good exit velocities. You can look at a heat map of the strike zone and you see, oh, all the good exit velocities are middle.
You know? Exactly.
So, like, that's the basis, I think, of the swing decision value and process.
Right, exactly. We do both. We say, are you taking advantage and swinging at the pitches that you should be inside the zone or not?
Yeah, exactly.
So it goes both ways with that. It's not just KMIS walk rate. So I think this is just a much better showcase of that. And actually, Scott Chu, our senior fantasy analyst who does all the hitting, the hitter list every week, he said, look, if I had to choose between contact ability or decision value, I'll take contact ability all day because if you're making contact and you have good power, like it's, let's say you have really good power. Do you want contact or do you want decision? I want contact, you know, it's, right. So it's, it actually eliminated
kind of the three templates though, of process plus and
right.
Of deciding if a hitter is good.
Exactly. So it's why those are the three things there. Definitely go check it out. It's a fun thing. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot more, but this is, that's hitters. Hi. So sorry. Can't believe we did that. Go check it out with PL Pro. We've got pitchers today. Ina brought to me a really interesting topic. I love this because we often save it for October and November, but really this is the moment that I think in season, we can kind of forget the nuances of players and we sit down and look at it in December and we just take a whole bucket of a season and say, this is who they are. Or this is what they were. And that's very not the case. You know, they have their ebbs and flows and they show their highs and they show their lows. And, you know, said, look, let's talk about 2025 breakouts. Let's talk about the guys that we think are going to be different than they are right now. And who are the ones that are necessarily doing well that we don't really think are going to hit another level in 2025. And you did a really good bit of research to find a good model to structure this conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I wanted to do, yeah, I think the way you set it up is really interesting too, because, you know, we do tend to think of, I've run sort of a piece that said seasons are arbitrary endpoints. So we tend to like, just be like, okay, at the end of the season, we talk about next season. And what's cool is, you know, you can evaluate all through and pitchers can be changing all through. So especially if they've had a bad couple of months, we may miss a good September. And I think that we could be in a better position to be predicting these if we are sort of thinking about next year, even as we're watching them now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you stick around because I was trying to watch a Brian Baio start with that in mind. Like, not only what are his flaws now, how good is he now, but how, like sort of dreaming on what could he do, you know, to be better in the future.
That's funny, you know, that's what gets me going every day. I'm like, oh, but please just do this thing. Yamamoto, throw high four seamers.
So I just came up with a really easy rubric, and it was pitchers under the age of 25 that with both a fastball and a slider that were above 100 stuff plus. I wanted to sort of means test this idea. So I have 2021 up on the leaderboard, 50 innings minimum. And I want to read to you the names that follow this rubric, because they're not all going to work, but you'll learn something from it. So the first one does not work. It's Luis Patino.
Oh, man. Oh,
but I think sometimes anything you come up with is going to be a miss. It's going to have a miss somewhere. Right.
Yeah.
You know, another good one is Luis Gil. It took him a little bit of time, but he got there. Another one that's a sort of a shrug emoji right now is Edward Cabrera. But I would suggest that you kind of keep an eye on command, because, definitely, you know, Joe Boyle probably fits this solution, but he's more Edward Cabrera than Luis Gil, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a name. Josiah Gray is on here, but that's really surprising to me.
Yeah, that is for me too. Josiah Gray, my understanding,
the fastball's not good.
Height adjusted VAA, right? Like he's a dip and dive and short guy. So good, good attacking
command. And injury's part of that situation. Julio Urias is a win for this mini model. Christian Javier is on here. Logan Gilbert is a win for this mini model. Carlos Hernandez probably goes in the bad command bucket.
Oh man. Wow. Yeah. I remember that Royals. You guys don't remember. Threw super hard.
I mean, he's still a Royal.
I'm sorry. If he goes to the pen, he's not, you know, he doesn't exist.
Yeah. But he doesn't exist. Luis Garcia of the Astros, is I would say a win for this mini model.
And this is what I just to remember here. This is 100 plus, 100 or 50, higher on fastball.
100 plus, yeah.
Luis Garcia is never really considered as an above average fastball,
but just barely.
Yeah, okay, okay.
102. But still, I actually above average fastball could even be 97. So there might be a couple of names I didn't miss, but I missed. But Justin Steele actually on this list. And then some really obvious ones, Dylan Cease, Freddy Peralta, Sandy Alcantara, and then some misses in Justin Dunn.
Oh, no, but here's the thing, Eno. He got hurt constantly.
Yeah.
And Justin Dunn had it for a second. Like, he saw the light. He had
I think that's part of the story of, like, this will break your heart trying to do this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, command is part of it and injury is a big part of it. I mean, even Luis Gil, who I'm calling a win for this mini model, it took him a while, you know, until, I mean, this is 2021 I'm talking about. So,
and
Zach Gallen fits just to finish up. Zach Gallen fits. Griffin Canning is a miss, but I think his fastball just really fell off, and I don't really know.
I mean, he's done a good job of adjusting away from that. Like, what Griffin Canning does now is four seamers are like, oh man, I cannot throw this in the zone, and I will do changeups and curveballs and sliders. And honestly, the only thing missing from Canning now is just, hey, don't throw so much in the zone with those breaking balls all the time. Mm. Like, just go a little bit more, just nibble slightly more. And I think that's really all Canning needs to do now.
Yeah. Some of it also is the stories aren't written on all these guys. Like,
yeah,
like I said, absolutely, with Edward Cabrera, shrug emoji, maybe Griffin Canning goes in the shrug emoji.
Yeah.
Last one that's a win, I would say, even though it's been not the healthiest ride, is Drew Rasmussen.
Oh, yeah.
So, those are all the 25-year-olds in 2021 that satisfy this equation. And it's a satisfying equation to me also, especially if you add in like a modicum of command. I mean, it doesn't have to be above average command, but you know, some of those names that we didn't like go away if you just say it has to have at least a 98 location plus or something.
There's two things I want to mention quickly. One, obviously, everyone's probably thinking of it. Sticky stuff, sure. 2021, there was an element of it still in the beginning of the year until this guy showed up and did something about it. And then, but no, the second, I actually, if you have a moment to do the same thing, but tell me the location plus leaders from 25 and under, because I think there's something to be said about trying to discern, hey, look, should we just be chasing stuff plus when it comes to potential breakouts in the future? Is there something to be said also about location guys, because we see constantly, we see pitchers have success early on, especially as a rookie or so. I mean, look at like Javier Assad even this season. Not necessarily a rookie, but young.
Oh, I hate this.
You hate it, right?
It's a good list. It's a good list.
Okay, so
I hate this. It's a good list.
Just a second, though, of like Assad, we saw it early in the year. It's more about locations and everything, and how long does that last, and is that really something that you see from a young arm? Like, is Soroka in there?
I would say this. Yeah. The top of the list is great.
Right. Because those are like early in your career, you have command.
And excellent command. Like 101 location plus, Colby Allard is on there. Trevor Rogers.
I call him Drala. Yeah.
Yeah. Trevor Rogers is down there. You know, like there's, Humberto Castellanos has a 101. Vladimir Gutierrez. Like,
oh, yeah. Right. Well, he had a run that made everyone wonder for a second. And that makes sense.
So I wouldn't bet on 101. But if you're talking about like, here's a list of 105 and above.
Uh-huh.
So that's location of 105 and above, which is really just excellent because the spread on location plus is very small. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there was a little piece of interesting research that came out this week. Max Bay was looking at release angles, and he did it in the same way that Michael Rosenberg did on Fangraphs about release angles, but he modeled it and showed it. And he showed the difference between Joe Ryan, who has the best release angle based command in baseball this year, and Freddy Peralta, who has the worst release angle based command in baseball this year. And he showed it's the tightness of the blobs that we are talking about on this show. And so, but the difference was, I mean, it's one circle inside another, but the difference was a lot smaller than people might think. So it's a good look at my Twitter page. It's a good representation of the difference in command. But so, the spread is not that large, but if you have excellent command, and you were under 25, this is who you were in 2021. Julio
and this Urias. Is something that Eno is going to share with you after this break.
Oh. All right, so I teased the first guy, but here it is. It's Julio Urias, Chris Paddock, Drew Rasmussen, Bailey Ober, Pablo Lopez, Eli Morgan, Dustin May, Joe Ryan, and Sandy Alcantara.
What?
I'd say there's one miss on that list.
Eli Morgan, man. Eli Morgan, the changeup looked so good.
But you could easily miss him. You could easily take him off the list by having any sort of, you have to also have a stuff plus of 95
right.
or something. You can even take Chris Paddock off for that one.
That's something.
It's definitely, it's something that I've not wanted to look at in my career, but it's more and more I'm trying to find a way to fold that into my analysis.
Oh man, that is wild to me how, okay. I'm thinking about 2021. So that was the Joe Ryan, like preview at the end of the year of like 5-6 starts or something.
Yeah.
Good run or so, had this really good game against the Cubs and stuff.
I guess my minimum is only 20 innings, actually.
I didn't understand height adjusted VAA then. I didn't, you know, all that thing stuff. Pablo Lopez does not surprise me at all.
Joe Ryan was also not the same pitcher back then.
True. I mean he's throwing softer. He didn't have the same split slider.
He's throwing a sinker now. He's throwing harder. Yeah. The splitter is different. I mean,
right.
He's really gone to work on that, but I guess underlying that is excellent command. And it turns out right. by a lot of different metrics, maybe the best command of the majors.
Man, that's wild. I mean, you have Bailey Ober there too, who, I mean, we called Bailey Ober Rizzy because he was just so consistent painting the four seamer upstairs. Who was another name in there? It was Drew Rasmussen.
And Dustin May, which is unfortunate. Oh, Sandy Alcantara. Sandy Alcantara is somebody I would have mortgaged the farm for in 2021. I mean,
yeah,
he had superlative stuff plus on 5 pitches, and top 10 command. I mean, he's the guy I would have done anything for.
Man, so here's the thing. I think about this a lot because I obviously, shocking, I know, guys, I watched a lot of Sandy Alcantara and in my day. So with Sandy, I understand why location plus is over the moon with him, because he was never really like a non-competitive pitch guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I never really felt that he was a precision guy. Right.
Does that make sense? I mean, he was a power guy. I would have thought
he was. Yeah, he was a power guy who go in the blob of the zone.
Right.
But never be like, okay, cool. I'm going to spot this pitch down away right now, and I'm going to put it like up and in over here. Like, it very much felt like, get in this.
It doesn't look like George Kirby at all. Yeah.
Right. And I'm thinking about a couple of these guys like Dustin May. I'm really surprised at him more than anyone.
It was 23 innings. That was the smallest sample in the top.
Gotcha. 10. Like, for example, I think Bailey Ober and I think Joe Ryan, I think, well, yeah, those guys, absolutely. Like, those definitely are more consistent with the precision, I think, of what they do. But yeah, then you say Sandy, and like, yeah, then all of a sudden 5 absurd. Like, I'm so happy we get him back next year. I'm sad that he got Tommy John in like September or October or something like that. It's not fair that you're going to rid me another year almost of Sandy Alcantara.
Yeah.
But he's gonna be so fun and so good, and I'm don't care. I'll stash him in the aisle all year. I don't care. I'm just gonna do.
Well, let's do the under 25, 20 innings year. Location plus over 105.
Oh yeah, right. So this is the fun. Okay, so we'll do location plus first because we're fresh on the mind of that one.
Brian Wu, number one.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely, no surprise there to me.
I think Brian Wu is a little bit of like kind of the Drew Rasmussen bet, where you're like, this is excellent stuff, excellent command, and I just don't know how many innings I'll get. And
he is Joe Ryan, though. Like, when you think about comp of what he does, you're talking to me about a fastball that just overwhelms with a really flat arm angle, and we don't know what we're going to get out of the secondaries. Hey, what's up, Joe Ryan?
But I think you have to, there's a little bit more innings risk than Joe Ryan.
100%. Not a question. Anyone who has dealt with Brian Wu this year, I mean, Seattle Mariners fans, like, you don't know. He just opened up through 90 pitches, and it was after a start where he said, well, I bothered my hamstring again, the one that put me on the IL. I don't know. Oh, you know what? Let me go 90 pitches for like the first time all year. it's unreal. I hope that he can find his, with that lower release angle, I don't know what it's going to be. I would hope like a turnover circle change, but I don't think he can do that. I don't know. We'll find out hopefully in the offseason if he can develop that really strong secondary pitch. Maybe he goes like the Nola route of a curveball from that angle. I don't know. No
I
idea. Just,
I almost wonder if there's like some sort of like weightlifting way out. like I want him to be bigger or something. I don't, or
yeah, maybe Cal Stenick or
something. Brian yeah. Yeah. second is Joey Estes, who is on Max Bay's list. I think he was number three in the in the big leagues in release angle base command.
Yeah.
And here he is, the second best young player, and he's 22. I asked him about it, and he mentioned that he used to throw harder as a kid, and I was like, "You're 22, shut up." but I wonder, you know, if there's he thinks, you know, he can maybe get back to sitting 94, like he used to. That would make him pretty interesting. You've got a good cutter and a good slider, and then an okay four seamer. It's on the lower stuff end. Next one is a fan. The podcast is a fan of Spencer Schwellenbach.
Oh my gosh! I see. This is yes. So just very quickly about Estes. I mean, I feel like that is the Eli Morgan of the group.
It could be, yeah.
It's just the stuff. I mean, he does locate that four-seamer incredibly well. I think he does get actually some decent vert on it. There's something there. I remember there's one element on that four-seamer that is kind of interesting. I think it might be vert. But, yeah, he does locate that. It's just, it's all, ugh. However, who knows? You're saying S is a 22, right? Like,
yeah, who knows? I wouldn't do a heavy bet. But I would say, like, if you're not, like for the A's, it makes total sense to get a guy like him.
Oh yeah,
give him a absolutely. Shot. And yeah, there's a chance that he could even put together a stripling like career where it doesn't look good at necessarily the back end, but you know, for 4 or 5 years, he's a pretty good pitcher. You know,
that makes
has
all
a
the
bunch
sense.
Of pitches and has command.
Yeah. So
yeah, with Schwellenbach, we've talked about a ton.
Yeah.
The next one is interesting. I don't know that I have a 2021 counterpart for him. It's Brandon Pfaadt.
Oh, really?
Yes. I think I don't know. He's maybe already had his breakout, but if we're talking like a 3.97 ERA this year, I could see him doing better than that next year.
Well, so for me there, like we look at all the guys that we talked about with the location plus, and we think, okay, how did they use that and actually become something legitimate, right? And so you have fastball guys there. You have Bailey Ober in there. You have Joe Ryan in there. You have Pablo Lopez in there. If you didn't know this, guys, like it's 16% plus swing strike for Pablo Lopez's four-seamer this year, which is kind of hilarious. And his real jump was learning the sweeper and also increased velocity after being also having like a really good jump.
Pfaadt is not too far from Pablo Lopez, I guess. It's like a decent four seam. It's okay.
Well, I think it's much better four seamer with Pablo Lopez than Brandon.
Yeah, Fox. It probably is. But I'm trying to find a comp, and it's like,
well, right. It's difficult because I think that's what I'm getting at is the ones that we saw before. They generally had either an overpowering fastball, or they had at least one. I mean, really two good secondaries. As and well,
really has just the
it's
one.
It's just a sleeper to me.
Yeah,
and that's the biggest question. It is really encouraging to hear. Like, look, Pfaadt has good location plus. And when we saw in the playoffs, that's how he did so well. Is that he nibbled perfectly? Like that is there, and that's I think how Pfaadt has actually performed well this year. At times, is yeah, he has those nights where it's just hitting the edges and all going well. It does mean that that's a foundation that if you were to find that extra pitch, some guys find the pitch, but they can't command it. They can't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like Pfaadt would be able to do something with it if you were to add it.
Yeah. And I like generally seeing like a collection of pitches that, you know, have 80s and 90s and stuff plus. So it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, could he, you know, it's a little bit easier to take something, you know, like Eric Fetty's been a great story this year. But he, you know, he still has terrible fastballs, you know?
Right.
You know, so I think it's hard to make huge jumps on fastballs. To have a 93 stuff plus four seam and 89 stuff plus sinker is actually pretty good. It's not standout. You know, Schwellenbach's four seam is obviously better, but with this foundation and, you know, four other pitches that, you know, are in the realm of good and excellent location, I think Fott is somebody that I'll actually have circled for next year. You know, it's a little bit more of my, like, if we need to, I'll finish the list, but you know, on this list, it's one of the better names that, you know, didn't, you know, already show us the breakout. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. No, absolutely.
You know, next is Slade Ciccone, who has multiple breaking balls and a good changeup and a similar four seam by stuff plus and similar location plus. This would be a huge breakout if it ever happens. I mean, people would not see this one coming. The only thing that would see this coming is average stuff and, you know, superlative command. That's
Me with Slade, when I've watched him, it's been a lot of zone. It's been a lot of just get it over the plate. I call it dancing with the disco when you throw sliders over the plate, just constantly, Anthony Descofani. And
I think that's going to be less and less of a good strategy going forward. And
batters are going to get more used to that.
I've got a piece coming out soon about the Boston Red Sox and how hitters have responded to that. So
yeah, right. Their pitching staff was so good initially, and now it's not as good.
So I think that is a part of Location Plus that, you know, we're all trying to pick apart. I think there is a little bit of a race for better command stats, and so it might be part of that. Is, you know, just getting in the zone is not the only thing.
Right.
Simeon Wood Richardson is next. He's my Eli Morgan on this list. I just think that I don't think the fastballs are good enough.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He's also dancing with the disco a good amount. I've seen many starts where it's just he pinpoints those heaters and it's like, okay, cool. You got it today.
Then the last two are Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who I hesitate to put on a breakout list because already good. And then Luis L. Ortiz, who we've talked about having replaced a changeup he can't command with a decent cutter, giving him three fastballs and a good breaking ball that has a decent shape for lefties and righties.
Yeah.
I will have Luis L. Ortiz you know, circled next year as a breakout candidate. The only problem will be that he might have already broken out.
Yeah, it's possible. I think the biggest thing with Luis L. Ortiz, I don't know if there's another level of domination because for me, like, okay, maybe the slider, then you say, great, it's over here. Now I'm going to do it lower. Now I'm going to be able to get whiffs on this thing. When I see him pitch, it's a lot of that generally get it in the zone and less of, hey, I'm splitting out my sinker. It's going to be over here. Hey, my slider is going to be down over here. Hey, yeah, my cutter is going to be over here.
Not great at differentiating the blobs or he had a hard time differentiating the four seam and two seam for a little bit, but he did get somewhere on that. And it's a good power package.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about Luis L. Ortiz on our On the Corner podcast. Eric Samulski is a big fan of what of Luis L. Ortiz is doing this year. I'll put it this way. His slider has a 15% swing strike rate. The cutter is just a 7%. The sinker is a 6%. Four seamer has actually shown more than I expected, 11 to 12% swing strike
rate. None of those are superlative. Those are all, ones are good. Like the average four seam swing strike rate, I think, is around 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just slightly above there. And the average slider swing strike rate when I last checked was 14%. So he's just barely over there.
Yeah. So it's not quite that level yet. It's possible that the slider does develop more into that. It becomes more of that put away offering. I mean, this year it's just a 19% put away rate, which is not good.
Mm-hmm.
It's below average. for a put away rate. You want to see like a 22, 23, especially if this is that pitch that you're throwing 40% of the time in a two strike count. So for Luis L. Ortiz, I get it. I guess I am a little surprised that it is this high of a command of a location.
It's plus rank. I have the thing, the filter is as a starter.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's cool. 35 innings as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the smallest sample on our list.
Gotcha.
So
are we going to take one more step forward of actually nailing down that precision a bit? It's possible. He certainly didn't show it before this year. Now all of a sudden it's finally there. So hopefully.
I mean, if you had to, like, I think we're both circling Brian Wu, but also how much can we say that's a breakout when he has, you know, two ERA as a starter this year? You know, we both like Spencer Schwellenbach. That might be more of a true breakout, you know, because he might end the season with a 3.9 or a 4.0 and do better next year, even.
Right.
I like Fott a little bit more than you, maybe. And
I can see that, though. That's the perfect scenario of, like, I think the reason I'm out on Fott is only because I don't know if he's going to add that pitch or not. Mm-hmm. If he does, there is that potential. And I could be undervaluing that because it just takes one for him in an actual true way where other guys are like, oh, he needs a blink. And like, it just goes away or something. Like, no, Fott, I can buy into that. It would make a huge impact.
If I had to get you to pick a long shot.
Yeah.
So the long shots are Joey Estes, Slade Ciccone, Simeon Woods Richardson, Luis L. Ortiz. If I had to make you pick a long shot, which one are you picking?
Joey Estes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know it sounds wild, but like, I mean, I'm watching him. I believe his location plus most, I think.
He saw a chart when he was at the Braves that showed like what people hit in different counts, and that changed his life.
Oh my gosh, there you go. And his ability, actually, we've seen games of legitimate whiffs on this four-seamer just based on him locating it well.
Yeah.
And with all of these guys, to me, I mean, say for the obvious ones like long shots, there needs to be growth in some fashion. And what you're telling me with Estes is, well, we see guys gain velocity all the time. He's 22. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he
really
had
like
four supposedly. So,
there you go. And then you say, okay, cool. What else is he missing? He has a four seamer that is like a rock for him, I think. I can very well see that continuing to grow. So the foundation, I think, is strongest with Estes.
Sounds good. Maybe after we come back, I'll give you the four seam slider list.
Eno, you didn't tell me who your long shot was.
Did I not? Okay, let me see here. My long shot based on location plus, if I have to pick one, is going to be Luis L. Ortiz.
Okay.
I like the breaking ball there. The stuff is a little bit better than it is for the other guys.
Nice.
And that'll be it. But Ciccone's, he's also had such big blow-ups that I'm just like,
yeah.
I don't think I really want to pick the guy with a 6 ERA. But right. This list, I feel a little bit more confident shopping in because as soon as you hear the names, you'll know why. Mm-hmm. Jared Jones is at the top of this list. Next comes Shane Boz,
sure.
who despite the sort of maybe not as good stuff as he had before, I'm still actually increasingly happy about the more I see him.
The last start was much better with the slider.
Right, yeah. Definitely. Hunter Green, Bryce Miller, Bobby Miller, let's just kick a moratorium on speaking about him. Grayson Rodriguez, Spencer Schwellenbach on two lists.
Oh my gosh.
Bold, Hunter Brown, Paul Skeens, Garrett Crochet, and then Nick Nastrini, Justin Robleski, and just barely sneaking in are Gavin Stone. And Luis Medina. Those are the names. The reason I'm going fast to them is not that we're not going to talk about them. Those are the ones we have to talk about because listed a whole bunch of people we don't have to talk about. Talk about Hunter Green. There is some stuff that's interesting about him, but he was always a guy that seemed ready to break out, and he's in his breakout. Yeah.
What's so funny, by the way, about Hunter Green is it's literally just homers on the four seamer. That's it.
Yeah.
It's 12 last year, and he's thrown more four seamers this year, and it's 4.
I think there that would be slightly better four seam command. A couple four seams replaced by, other pitches, over the course of the game. It's just, and also home run rate is the noisiest stat for pitchers. Yep. So he probably gave up a little bit few too many homers than he should have true talent before. And maybe now he's a few homers than he should be giving up now.
Right.
And the true talent somewhere in between 280 and 480. He always had this ability. I think we could talk about Bryce Miller a little bit, but the end of that list was, I think, fascinating. And there isn't one that I'm sure about between Nastrini, Robleski, Stone, and Medina. And I'm going to sneak David Festa in with the 99.
I'm going to say
Brown's right there too.
Do you have Jack Leiter in this?
I did a 20 inning minimum.
If you do a 10, is Jack Leiter appearing? Because here's the thing, I've become obsessed with our Today's Four Seamer app, which is the most fun thing ever because it has not only like obviously the majors, so I can say, okay, cool, this was Tyler Malley's IVB yesterday. Great.
Yeah, Jack Leiter fits. Yeah, I have to get all the way down to 5 innings, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So so what I keep seeing is using this, I don't just check the major leagues. I actually go AAA because like I am not the guy that is on top of every single AAA prospect. This is not my world, right? You can only focus on one thing and be an expert at that. And it's for me, it's major league starting pitchers. I'm trying to get better at it. And this tool is helping me because every day I just say, okay, who dominated with their four seamers yesterday in AAA, right? And yeah, of course we see some normal names here and there, but Jack Leiter is always up. He is like a 130, 120, which is relative to major leagues, not to the minors of this four seamer. And the other guy is Nick Nastrini. And watching him pitch, man, I remember when he first came up it was so frustrating because it was there. His slider is filthy. He has an unbelievably good four seamer. He just can't spot the thing. Like it was so clear jitters to me.
Yeah.
For Nastrini. I mean, he had the yips, the whole deal. And
84 location plus is just, I very rarely see a number like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm surprised it's not 55. Like if you just look at the four seamer, absolutely. Like worse than Hayden Birdsong, guys, like not even close even. And that to me is just, it's right there. Like that is, to me, when you see such an extreme of location being bad and it's not just kind of like casually like, okay, cool, this is just who you are. To me, it's more of an indication that it's a mental thing and not really like what your ability is. And Nastrini, he's clearly the one I'm circling of like the biggest just surprise, I think, that's a lot of people.
Long shot. Your long shot of long shots.
I mean, or I'm just going through it. Oh, yeah. I mean, Jack Leiter, too. Don't forget about him. I mean, his stuff is, I think, super good. So
when I relax the things, Jack Leiter's on there with a terrible command. And Joey Cantillo snuck in.
Really?
Surprisingly.
Cantillo?
Yeah.
I wasn't too impressed with him.
No, I mean, it probably didn't look that great because it's only a 101 on the stuff plus on the fastball. Mm-hmm. And it was poor command as well.
Yeah.
But, it's only a 90 stuff plus for Joey Cantillo on the changeup. And I do think the changeup is probably better than that. So I think Cantillo is an interesting guy. In fact, I might have him above Robleski, who Robleski's slider stuff plus 101, that's actually below average.
Yeah, that's bad. You probably have like a 110 or something as
average state. It's above 105 at least. So
yeah,
I don't think that in the spirit of this list, I did say 100 for both. In the spirit of this list, though, he doesn't count. So Medina, I think Medina, Nastrini, and Leiter just belong in the Joe Boyle bucket, where it's just, one of those guys may. It's the Edward Cabrera package, And I want to go back. Let me go back to 2021, go to the bad location bucket and see if any of these guys, who got out of there. I mean, it's Edward Cabrera, Jackson Kowar, Johan Oviedo, Justice Sheffield. It's like when you're in the bad location bucket, Jesus Cesardo is probably the biggest success story. Christian Javier is a success story.
Yeah, definitely.
Justin Steele actually had a 96 location plus.
Yeah, I actually that does not surprise me in the slightest. That was a huge thing that all of a sudden that was my negative. Like we bonded over like, oh yeah, Justin Steele, bad fastball, because like he can't spot this thing. All of a sudden he started to do it. it was really good.
Patrick Sandoval had a decent career despite poor locations. Luis Gil and Dylan Cease, however, Luis Gil and Dylan Cease even at that time had 97s. So, you know, you can have bad and you can have bad. I mean, right. Jack Leiter has a 95 location plus, Nick Nastrini 84.
Luis Medina, 95. I do want to clarify here. Location plus, it's a full season metric. And
it's not great at in this, these small samples.
Everything that they do as well. Yeah. So when I think of Medina, when I think of Nastrini, I think of Leiter. Watching all of these guys, and I've watched all three of them a lot. With Medina, he's very much more of the Professor Chaos, general disarray, whatever you want to say, of like scattershot, like you or cherry bomb back and forth. Just one game, he's like, cool, I've got my slider and curveball today. This is great. The next one, I'm like, never mind. Wasn't ever there, right? Nastrini, I think, actually has more of a, has more ability to tweak what he's doing to actually sustain it. Hmm. And Jack Leiter, I got to say, from what I saw, there were a lot of really good, consistent command pitches like that. He speaks more to me of a guy that does have it. And that is something that grows and there's a foundation. Medina,
I'm picking in that bucket out of those pitchers, it's Jack Leiter for me.
Yeah, I would probably go Jack Leiter, Nastrini. Nastrini's so good. But Jack Leiter is just literally every single day he pitches. He's just like, hey, I'm bright red. Why am I not in the majors? Yeah, it's he's got to be back soon enough, right? Like, right? I would think.
Because the problem is that DeGrom is coming back, and
I forgot about DeGrom.
They're already using Dunning out of the bullpen. And
can I ask you a quick question? Because I mean, I'll be honest with you guys. We have not done the tangent thing in a long time. I think honestly the beginning of the year it's a lot more of a web of 20 million guys that are on our minds. Now it's like, cool, we know who this guy is, that guy is,
right, a little bit better. Yeah,
but I had this proposal during the trade deadline that why wouldn't like the Mets or the Yankees try to trade for Jacob DeGrom? And to me, the only pushback I got is like, oh, he's hurt all the time, it's a dead weight money, etc. In my view, you got to look at a team, maybe even the Dodgers, a team that has all the money and is looking to make a legitimate October run.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob DeGrom theoretically going to be healthy for October. And when he's healthy, he's arguably the best pitcher in the world. Yeah. Why? Like, to me, that felt like something that should have been more of a conversation. I keep feeling like there's something massive that I'm really missing. A different side of the equation.
I can give you a little bit of like sort of the reporting side is that,
please.
What we heard, Britt Giroli mentioned this on Rates and Barrels, is that the Rangers were frustrating to deal with at the deadline, that they seem to kind of want to maybe stay in it because they're only like 4.5 games out of, sorry, the power's going out of my thing. they're only like 4.5 games out of the division lead.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they sold, what did they sell? They sold
Lorenzen,
who they had, you know, sort of ready replacement for, and Max Scherzer. They didn't sell Max Scherzer, which I think surprising to me, maybe an indictment of where Max Scherzer is today in terms of stuff and career arcs and stuff like that. But there were a lot more pieces that they could have sold if they were selling.
Right.
So, I think that, you know, internally the Rangers feel like this is just a lost season and they're ready to be super competitive again next year.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. That makes
I think it's more on the selling side than the buying side. I think that a lot more people would have been. The Scherzo one is interesting to me because then he goes back on the IL with, you know, shoulder fatigue, and it's like, you know, stuff plus numbers are on his fastball the worst they've been in the stuff plus era for Max Scherzer, and the, you know, swing strikes are gone, and so I think that to some extent there may not have been a lot of people asking for him.
Yeah, which sure. Is
a sad thing to say, but he's. I mean, he's an old man.
He's old. It happens.
Yeah.
The thing in the world is time. All right. So that makes more sense as far as like where the Rangers stood. I just got to think like, man, this is the prime thing to get is the best pitcher on the planet that would be ready for October and such. But that's a tangent for another time. I'm just kidding. End of that tangent. The tangent is now and it's over.
Well, speaking of tangents, like, you know, we went on a little bit of a tangent with home road splits on Rates and Barrels this week. Mm-hmm. And I had not looked into Bryce Miller's home away splits before.
Okay.
I did know that that Seattle augments strikeouts like nobody's business.
Really?
It's the park that augments strikeouts the most.
No wonder they strike out so much.
Yeah, I think that is part of the offensive problem, but it's also a sort of a hidden thing. So this year, Bryce Miller has a 2.27 ERA at home and a 5.37 away. And yes, that might have some noise in it, but it's 2.97 for his career, 5.27 away for his career.
Wow.
And yes, ERA is not predictive and has noise in it, but if you look at strikeout percentages home and away, he has a 25% strikeout rate at home and an 18.5 away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that is stark. An 18.5% strikeout rate guy is somebody I would tell you to stay away from.
Right.
I mean, that is somebody that would have to have excellent ground ball ability or just superlative command, which Miller is not bad, at least in terms of awarding walks.
Right. Right. He's more of the generalized get me in the zone kind of guy. Like he throws around. He's not a precision guy. He's a control guy.
Yeah. But you know, what are you going to do with a 5.3 ERA from a home career? Like, you know, I would say he can't be on a breakout list because he's already broken out, but maybe there's another level for him if he just irons out the away split.
Yeah. And then doesn't think that the splitter is the answer. That would be
that's your
the
thing.
Curve. Actually, here's the thing. Actually, with Bryce Miller, what happened two starts ago was so interesting to me. Starting in the fifth, he threw one curveball, and then in the sixth, I think he even went to the seventh in that game. He threw like nine more curveballs, and it was
the most he's thrown all year. Yeah,
and then he threw I think 10 in that one, and the last game he threw 12. And I was hoping, okay, great, Bryce Miller, you just found at the end of this game. This, I got a breaking ball. This thing's actually feeling all right. It's a nice tight one. Kind of reminds me a little of like the Lance McCullers, like 84 at times, like right at the bottom. So, okay. You're going to throw this in the first inning now, right? No, wait until the fourth inning.
And I'm like, average 86 on it against the Phillies.
Don't be the backup option. Like this is, Bryce Miller to me has been searching for the right complement to his four seamer. It is a very good overpowering four seamer. We know this. The only reason he's a major leaguer is because of this fastball.
And he was a reliever in college. So this is what it's all coming off that fastball, but the innings are there. The command is not a negative at least.
Right.
There are some pieces there. If we're talking breakout, like, who on this list is not considered a top 25 pitcher right now, like a Jared Jones or something, you know, but could be next year. My favorites are Bryce Miller and Shane Boz. Hunter Green's like right there. So, you know, it can be a trio if you like.
I think I'm going to favor Hunter
Green. Oh, I missed one name. River Ryan's on this list. Maybe that's
my God. Do you like River Ryan?
Yes, I like River Ryan. But okay, in terms of like who could be a top 20 pitcher next year, River Ryan, the command numbers aren't there yet. And I'd like to see a little bit more from the command to know what kind of command we're dealing with.
Well, right. We had the first and third games were not. The second game was. So we're in a weird boat at the moment because that second game is against the Astros. He was so locked in. It was so great. So at least like we've seen a full game of that, like actually coming together. And Kyle Bode will always tell you, like, first year in the majors command stuff is always wonky because they're dealing with a new environment, their jitters, emotions, all this kind of stuff, not getting settled in. It's not always, I shouldn't say always, but it's a lot noisier than others. So it can be difficult, I think, to really get a perfect picture of it. I do want to ask you, though, River Ryan was not on both lists, but Spencer Schmallenbach was. Are you more in on Ryan for next year or Schmallenbach?
Ryan. I just think there's just more pitches with superlative stuff. And I don't think that I would say, you know, he has an interesting story because he was a position player for the Padres. Right.
And so it was the Grom.
He hasn't been pitching that long. If you look at something like, you know, Fangraphs, command grades, 40 present, 45 future. If you look at his walk rates, it's not Edward Cabrarian. Like,
no, it's not.
It's like in 1 year it was over.
And I got to say about Edward Cabrera quickly, he's gotten better at this. I think this year for Edward Cabrera, his walk rates are weird and he's had injuries, but he was really showcasing improvement before his first injury. And since returning, he's had one game where it was wonky, I think, but the others, I mean, he had a 7 strikeout zero walk game. He just had another really good one against Atlanta.
I bought this
year. I'm buying in on Edward Cabrera. So
I bought this year and it hasn't been fun. I'll buy again next year.
Yeah,
what I'm hoping for next year, I think, is that the knee is healthy.
Right.
And there's a little bit of a, you know, I think that can affect your command.
Well, there's two things quickly here is Edward Cabrera's slider, I think, was a really good addition and then just disappeared, which I don't like. But second, something that was really illuminating to me and something I constantly mention is our judgment of organizations and their ability to develop pitching, I think, is completely skewed. I mean, even us, we talk about like, okay, cool, the Astros. And it's like, do we like the Astros now? Or, you know, the Guardians or the Dodgers. And it's really difficult for us to really understand how much information is actually going to players, how much discussion is being had, and how much they really invest in proper pitching development. And even when it doesn't work out, just still having the right process of information and actually working on things is going on, even if, you know, again, that they're not killing it. And the quote that I got to mention, I saw this and it seemed like a very verified source. It wasn't it wasn't like Ken Rosenthal or something, but it was that Trevor Rogers mentioned that going from the Marlins to the Orioles, that he's already experienced more help than he did at any point with the Marlins. Like,
yeah,
more that should be more incredibly eye opening to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that there's so much that goes into success with a player that it's hard to know who to attribute it to.
The
Marlins absolutely could have been good at scouting.
Right.
That could have been why they had good pitchers, you know.
Right.
The Marlins have a great home park for pitchers. That could have just been a great way for a pitcher to land in the major leagues and just be like, oh, you know, not everything every mistake I make gets punished. You know, actually I can make some mistakes and I can grow and I can have confidence. Like, how important is confidence when it comes to command? Command,
yeah,
pitchers often tell me is confidence.
Yeah, so, it's focused. It's being in the flow. Cannot agree more about that.
Yeah, and then you can lose personnel. Like the Astros could have been really good at it because maybe their R&D squad was top of the line and they were feeding the right information to all the right coaches. If you think about the Astros, they've lost their vaunted pitching coach. Like they're, you know, sort of, you know, if there's a Mount Rushmore of pitching coaches, you know, he was on it. They lost their director of R&D and they lost two prime R&D analysts on that squad. So I'm not saying that all of a sudden the reports will be crap, but it just, you know, they've lost brain power along the way and you don't know how that's going to affect Spencer Argetti. Obviously Hunter Brown came out the other side. It took a little while.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting way to look at Edward Cabrera. Is he just kind of trapped by that? Is he nuts? Is that going to get better? I hope so. I'm on the side with you. I think about River Ryan. I think again, it's just he's
going to be more expensive. I think it's going to be bigger deal to you know, like he like a lot of people are going to like him.
Right.
I think with Edward Cabrera, you could be the only person who likes him, you know. I'm not sure. You'll have two supporters on this podcast.
Well, the other one is, yeah, there you go. And the other one, of course, was Spencer Schmalenbach. And what's interesting about him, I mean, we've talked about him so much, but how good is the four-seamer or not? And he's more of a kitchen sink guy than River Ryan is. And I do trust that he's able to manipulate those a little bit better with the cutter, with the curveball, changeup, slider. And I mean, I think he might even be a splitter, if I remember correctly, for Schmalenbach. But the four-seamer being in there, it is not a vert four-seamer. It comes in hard. He has good flat attack with it, but it's a pitch that he needs to not establish like 50% of the time. It needs to be one of those sneaky 25% pitches for him to really get the most out of that, because those starts that he would go like 11 strikeouts, like 300 runs or so, guess what? The four-seamer is what got hit, right? And Schmalenbach could develop that feel. However, not having River Ryan's four-seamer does hurt him as far as I think the floor goes. It's just a different path towards that success. They're both good. And I'm with you that River Ryan's probably going to be the most expensive next year, but Schmalenbach's really good. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm a big fan. Over this list one more time here, you have Robleski as well.
Yeah.
Who you want to talk about?
Well, I said that the slider isn't actually above average. I don't think he's on my list. I'd rather, if I had a choice between him and Joey Cantillo, I'd actually take Joey Cantillo. Why? Gavin Stone has moved his four seam into this territory.
Right. It was only in 92 or so, and then it became in 94, 95.
Yeah. And he's added IVB, Gavin Stone. Yeah. So
that's nice.
The only thing is that I'm not sure that he's much better than this. So breakout, like I think he's maybe in the already broke out category.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real problem with the River Ryan too.
Over the past month.
What if River Ryan ends this year with 30 innings and a 2.5 ERA, you know, it's like,
right.
He's going to break out next year, you know? So the only thing I wanted to add to this was sorting it by sinkers. And then that name comes up that I brought up earlier.
And whose name is that?
I'll tell you right after this. Brian Baio.
I'm getting such a kick out of Eno's ad breaks. It's like inquisitive. I'm like, can I do this?
Yeah. Some of them you won't ever hear because they'll just get erased.
Brian Baio is sinker over 100 stuff plus, you're saying.
Yeah. So he joins the list. The only players that join the list, if you focus on sinkers and sliders, rather the four seamers and sliders, are Brian Baio, Randy Vasquez, who I don't know. He's another guy like Edward Cabrera that I'm gonna try and have a couple shares of every year, and I do believe he can put it together. I think he should. He's a prime candidate for just throwing the four seam fastball less.
Yeah.
And Robert Gasser sneaks in, but Brian Baio is right there. And so I thought, you know, I had big disagreements with people beginning the season about Brian Baio versus Hunter Green. And I was way on Hunter Green my numbers have never really liked Brian Baio, but I've watched him and I find him intriguing. So yesterday I decided I'd watch a few innings and try to see how his approach changed over time. And, you know, one of the big things was, you know, Vinny Pascantino steps up to the plate, and, you know, Vinny Pascantino makes contact and hits the ball decently hard. So you're a little afraid of him. He came up with runners on. It was like, it ended up being a 6-5 game. So it was a lot of runs were scored in this. And Brian Baio's first, I don't know if I saw the first at bat, but the second at bat, he just throws three changeups in a row to Pascantino. And he does a really great job of lowest. Yeah. And Pascantino just looks like ridiculous. He's just swinging over the top of these things as hard as he can.
Right.
And so I was like, poof. Yeah, like, you know, Stuff Plus doesn't like his changeup. That looks like a good changeup to me. He locates it well. It's rated well by scouting grades. Like, maybe we're just missing something on the changeup. Like, this could be a pretty good changeup. this is a breakout candidate. He's got the slider, he's got the sinker. Next time up, Pasquantino comes, he throws the changeup again.
Yeah.
And this time he throws it like a foot higher.
It's, and it's Pasquantino a finger away. Ugh.
And he nails it for a double.
Yeah.
And so I this is more of an open question mark.
Yeah.
I think the tools are there. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has terrible command, but obviously there's something there. That wasn't a great changeup he threw. There isn't a pitch that I can be like, oh, he should just throw this pitch because he's tried the four seam and hasn't been good. I don't think he should throw the cutter because the slider for him is a cutter. He's just been throwing it harder and harder. So I don't think that he can also throw a cutter. So I don't think cutter's on the table. He's not a splitter candidate. You know, I don't think a sweeper is what he needs. So I don't have a quote unquote fix for Brian Bale other than maybe the command just takes a little step forward. Maybe he doesn't throw four changeups in a row to Vinny Pasquantino. You know what I mean? Like there's like, I don't know. There's the pieces are all there, but I don't have a fix for him. I like if
I actually, if he came I have
to me and I was a pitching coach, you have a fix for him?
It's just time.
It might be.
For Bayo, it's been an interesting journey. I mean, last year, I was certainly the higher on Bayo because I just didn't want to deal with Hunter Green. Of course, I totally got that right. With Bayo last year, he's sinker changeup, right? It was sinker changeup, and he does a really good job of mirroring those two pitches. He has done. He's a mini Logan Webb in this way of trying to sneak in those sinkers and then changeups underneath. I mean, even yesterday in that game,
he's not too far from Logan Webb,
and it's a 17% zone rate on that changeup. But he had a 61% strike rate because he got 53% O swing. This is Bayo last night against the Royals. Like that's the world. That's what you want. And how he gets his outs is that changeup stays low right underneath the zone. You have the called strikes with the sinker. And I saw a guy that was going to go every 5 days for the Red Sox has the quality start makeup like of Logan Webb of cool getting those quicker outs and also with sinkers and with changeups and then also having the upside of more with the slider development because that was something that we hadn't really taken off. We saw a moment at the end of September of last year for Brian Bayo. And we thought, okay, this is actually going to be a thing that he does. We didn't like the four seamer. What do you know? He like barely throws it out. Good job. Good stuff. So what I've been waiting for is Bayo to get comfortable with the slider and then still have the sinker and changeup. And it's been such a ride of the slider not really being there, but the sinker and changeup being there. Okay. Then the changeup disappears.
The slider not being there. I mean, he's throwing it a lot. He's throwing it 30 and 40%.
The whole journey of the season of like not initially. And then the slider wakes up because the changeup's gone. Okay, now great. The changeup's in like and all the parts are slowly coming together. And honestly, my takeaway from that whole start yesterday is that the sinker only had 3 called strikes. This is a pitch that was a 22% called strike rate for the season. And if he had those called strikes, then all of a sudden now you can get through at bats much more efficiently. But he wasn't getting them. The Royals were ready for those. That's why they swung so many of the changeups out of the zone as aggressively as they did.
Because the slider had 42% CSW.
And yeah, they were betting sinker, and that burned him a bit. So that means to me, great, you got to be throwing more of those changeups. He threw one too many, of course, to Pasquantino. Also allowed a home run on that pitch as well. But those were in the zone, and those weren't out of the zone. And most of the ones were not that pitch hanging up. So for me, this is a prime example of a guy that just needs more time on the hill, getting exactly his rhythm down because he has the tools, as you said, and it doesn't need anything else to me. Like, yeah, Logan Webb is my closest comp here of just like, get more of this rhythm, get more into it. I think Bayo's got a good, solid thing. Is he necessarily going to be peak Logan Webb? Probably not because that changeup is just ridiculous. But this is a solid pitcher who doesn't really need to do another major thing. He just needs to refine the things that he has.
I mean, listening to you speak about the called strikes thing a little bit, I just poked around and the Red Sox are 27th in framing.
Oh.
And Connor Wong is one of the worst framers in baseball this year.
Oh man, who's up there? Because are they a free agent?
No, Connor Wong is a rookie.
No, I mean as in the free agent to pick up to sign as a framer.
Oh yeah. I don't know. Like they could do that. They just brought in Danny Jansen.
Oh yeah.
Who I don't know if he was catching last night. I could check that real quick, but
Brian Bello is someone that will always be, I think the last 2 months are going to be really interesting for Brian Bello to see if he can really
Connor get Wong was catching last night. So it could be something. I'm not sure that Connor Wong is a starting level catcher from a lot of different aspects. Mm-hmm. He has been hitting this year, but you know, what is the defensive outlook for him is another question. So
there you go.
If he also is young in terms of catching at the major league level, he's 28, but he only has 800 plate appearances at the major league level. Connor Wong does. So maybe he'll just get better at it. That's one thing that the Brewers were always amazing at, was improving the framing. Like, they got William Contreras, who was obviously a great offensive catcher. I think the bet in Atlanta was that he wasn't a great defensive catcher. They run him through the Brewer mill when it comes to framing, and he's been fine. So there could be something where maybe the Red Sox improve their framing coaching, you know, but whatever it is, that does seem to be something that could have an outsized impact on him.
Yeah.
On Brian Bello. Because if he's getting poor framing, we're not seeing like huge, we're not seeing terrible command. We're seeing at least three good pitches. It seems like he has the building blocks to succeed. So I think I'll have him circled as
there you go.
Potential breakout for next year.
All right. So I do want to end this one on just kind of giving you a list of names briefly. No, we're not going to go on massive tangents. I promise, guys. Mm-hmm. Guys that right now for me are in this mold of like, you are not to be trusted, but there is either some showcase of promise, and we're wondering if it's going to stick. Like, a good example would be like Ben Lively or Tobias Myers. Are those guys that are something that could be repeated and really moved forward with next year? There's also, say, Mackenzie Gore. What are we doing there? Yeah, I look like an idiot 2 weeks ago. Talking about him for the second half, but there's Spencer Arrighetti as well. There's DJ Hers, even Andrew Abbott. Is there a guy in there that you're like, oh yeah, no, that's the one I'm going to be leaning on next year?
I do not know. My dogs are going crazy. I did not like, if I had to choose of any of those names that you just said,
yeah.
I think it would be Gore.
Yeah,
it's a good foundation in terms of having that fastball, but it isn't great command. I mean, DJ Hurts, bad command. Tobias Myers, not great stuff. Although I would say that team does a pretty good job of maximizing players like that.
Absolutely. Spencer Arrighetti, are you in on this at all? Because as long as he's throwing strikes, four-seamer has a really good shape to it. Secondaries are good enough, and he has a decent array of them.
Yeah, that might actually be one of the names that I pick, especially because I do believe that Stuff Plus is underrating his cutter because it's labeling it as a fastball. And it's pretty obviously not a fastball because he throws it 88 against a 94 mile an hour fastball.
Right.
So that's a cutter. That's a cutter slash gyro slider or something, you know.
Right.
And so if that's happening, I would assume he has decent stuff on the cutter, which would mean that he has three breaking balls or three secondaries.
Yeah, the curveball cutter sweeper is in there. There's also an 8% usage changeup, but that's a sub 50% strike rate, so we don't really care about that. But that cutter, by the way, is about 5.7 PLV.
There's also, you know, one thing is just bet on somebody who's struck out 26% of the batters he's seen.
Yeah, right. Pretty straightforward. I'm with you there. With Gore, I feel like he just needs to get off the Nationals. I know Sean Doolittle has helped. I feel as if he just wallows there. I mean, we talked about that a while ago about the defense behind him too.
He could be interesting in a pitcher's park too. I mean, just you know, to help him suppress some of those balls in play or the home runs or something.
Definitely. One last name. Kyle Harrison. I mean, we can't, right? This is just nothing's changed. Nothing has changed.
No, I don't know how to bet on him. I had, gotten some intel before that, like, he's just really weird because he's, we've talked about how he's a high spin, low efficiency, low slot four seamer.
Right.
And how that, is difficult to teach pitches or to add pitches to. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I've heard that he's just not a good pronator.
Yeah.
And so that's why his changeup has never been good. So, you know, if you are a good pronator, you can do something. It's almost like Sean Manaea with better velocity, but worse command.
Yeah. It's not, it's
Manaea has gotten there, but I would say
that weird, man.
He's taken a long time to get there too.
Stretches. He gets these stretches and then it kind of meanders and then it stretches again. Sean Manaea, but we're running out of time. You know, what are you working on this week?
Oh, just that fun piece about Boston, fun piece about Orioles. It's more on the hitting side.
Oh, nice.
May look at something a little schedule dependent because, if you look at the playoff races, the White Sox are, so terrible, that they may move the line a little bit for some playoff races. Whereas in the NL, you do have two teams that are bad. In the Marlins and Rockies, neither's as bad as the White Sox.
Right.
Whereas in the AL, you have the White Sox and A's, where the A's are clearly better than the Marlins or Rockies. So I think right now I have a question out. What happens if you just flip those two teams in the schedule, those four teams? So if you just put the White Sox and A's into the National League and the Marlins and Rockies into the American League.
Oh, that's interesting. So
hopefully that'll produce something interesting to say about the playoff race down the stretch. But if you look at somebody like the Padres, their interleague play is the White Sox. So that's who's off for them.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to those. And of course, your pitcher list. We're all about Process Plus right now. So go check that out with PL Pro. And obviously follow at Blandalytics. That's Kyle Bland. He's posting about a ton. We have our primer article from Nate Schwartz here on the site, What is Process Plus? But that is it for this week. So on the behalf of Ian Osaris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.